today on Rocking the Suburbs.
It's a neutral milk. I remember seeing them in the press, and I'm like, what the heck kind of name is that? When are they going to stop being neutral? Maybe they need to take a side.
All right, it's time for another bracket report here on Rockin' the Suburbs. I am Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us, as always, we have our ace tournament analysts. Hello, Jason Goble.
Hey, everybody.
And hello, Mike Coley.
What is going on?
All right. Well, what is going on is 90s album madness. And we are halfway through the first round now. Matchups daily at facebook.com/suburbspod. On today's bracket report, we are going to recap the first round action in the critics quadrant, and then we are going to preview, look ahead at the first round matchups in the listeners quadrant. So we'll get to that in just a moment. In general, though, at this halfway point in the first round, how are you guys feeling?
I'll tell you, I'm enjoying this. I think it's been a fun romp thus far, especially this critics group. There were a bunch of fun matchups, and you know, it's quite exciting, quite tense, and quite interesting. Bunch of quites.
There's a lot of surprises for me anyway. Surprises in some of the blowouts and surprises in how close some of the other matches were that weren't blowouts. But yeah, this quadrant's been super fun. So
yeah, it's been great.
Looking forward to see it progress.
You know, one thing we haven't discussed here, we'll do this real quickly, is Jason and Mike, who are your college basketball teams? Jason, I know you addressed this in previous years, but tell people again, who do you follow in college hoops?
Well, I mean, primarily I'm a Colgate graduate, so the Colgate Raiders. And look, I'm awaiting you know, the scandal to ultimately blow out the franchise for a few, or college for a couple of years, but you can't argue with Pitino and what he's been doing with the Red Storm as of late. So I'm also a St. John's guy.
There you go. All right. And Mike Coley.
My degree says Syracuse University. So unfortunately, I'm an Orange fella. We're going through some lean years here. But I've been a Syracuse fan since I was a kid. And they're right down the road. Jay, I do follow Colgate as well. My wife used to work in the art gallery there when she was in high school.
Oh, wow. Okay. Nice. I mean, I remember back in the day, we would have our annual both basketball and football game where you guys would humiliate us. But it was always fun to at least play against a top, you know, a top team at the Boeheim team.
Hey, Mike, you'll always have Carmelo Anthony.
Oh, yeah. That was oh, my God. That year, I seriously cried when they won that national championship. I never thought I'd see it in my lifetime.
We won't revisit 1987. We'll just leave that alone.
No, please don't. No.
Okay,
please,
all right. Okay, let's move on to 90s album madness. In the critics quadrant, the first round, 8 matchups here. These are albums that were highly rated on the Rolling Stone top 500 albums of all time, and they are ranked accordingly, seated accordingly. There really was only one close vote here. The other 7 matchups, some of them were blowouts. One was kind of sort of close, but not really. So anyway, let's start here. Starting the number 1 seed facing the number 16 seed. This one was an upset, and it was close. Number 16, Hole, Lived Through This, upsetting number 1, Lauryn Hill, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, 58 to 52. Jason.
Well, you know, look, when we last left your listeners, I think we all said you guys should go vote. And I think when we did our taping for the last one, this one was neck and neck. And it pretty much remained neck and neck. I think Hull, like every time I checked, Hull was up. But it was only like eight votes. So it was very close. You know, Miss Lauren, I still remain a fan. I love this album. But again, I can't argue with that whole album, which I think was, you know, definitely something that I listened to a lot back in the day also.
All right, Mike?
I really listened to the Lauryn Hill album when it came out. Wasn't in my wheelhouse back then. As the years have gone on and the praise has been heaped upon that album, I started digging into it a little bit more. I didn't really dig the whole album either. I mean, I did listen to it, and you know, it was on the radio a lot back then. But I was very surprised that Hole pulled the upset off in this one.
I would say that even if I wanted to say something derogatory about Hull, I'm afraid Courtney will find out where I live and I'll get very unpleasant mail. So, but that having been said, Courtney, relax. I do love living through this.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Mike on this. I think that if you listen to both these records in contemporary times, which I did last week, it's hard to think that the Lauryn Hill album hasn't aged immensely better and wasn't, you know, a really forward-looking statement at the time. However, as I said last week on the last update, I wouldn't want the 90s without Courtney Love, and we're going to have a little more of Courtney now going on, so that's a good thing.
There you go. All right, moving on here. Number 2 against number 15. This also was an upset. Number 15, Lucinda Williams, Car Wheels on a Gravel Road, 66 votes to number 2, Notorious B.I.G., Ready to Die, 23 votes.
Lucinda Williams saying, "You're not taking my joy, B.I.G." Any event, look, I'll say a couple of things. I think, number one, this is an audience that does like Lucinda Williams. I know you got January new music coming up. I'm assuming somebody will probably end up picking the Lucinda album that just came out. So she's also fresh in people's minds. But, I mean, Car Wheels on a Gravel Road is also like a classic, you know, maybe my first exposure to like Americana music at the end of the day. So, I thought it was going to be closer, but I'm not surprised that Lucinda won this one.
Mike?
I was a little bit surprised. Lucinda Williams, she was kind of on my radar back then. Peripherally though, Notorious B.I.G. was everywhere. Every bar was playing Biggie, and he wasn't getting much radio play, but Biggie was Biggie. Biggie. But then again, as Jason mentioned, this audience here leans more Americana, I think, than hip hop. So I guess that was the tale that was told here, and sadly, Biggie is once again off to the beyond.
Yeah, I'm with you, Mike. I think this matchup is one of several very disparate matchups that you could have. I mean, if you were listening to Car Wheels on a Gravel Road and then someone said, "All right, go pull out the 180 reverse of what that was just," and Ready to Die might be that record. So you could see how that happened. But, you know, there's a couple, as we'll go through this critics quadrant in the first round, there's a couple really disparate matchups that are one side of the coin and the other.
Yeah. It just shows how interesting the 90s were, I think. In terms of quality music. Yeah. Okay, another upset, number 3 versus 14, the 14 winning. And let me just say, REM ain't nothing to F with. REM automatic. REM automatic for the people, 92 over Wu-Tang Clan. Enter the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers, 32.
Well, I guess to start with, speaking of disparate, that having been said, you know, look, Wu-Tang, I tried. I tried in the last episode. I tried to rally the vote. Old Dirty, rest in peace. I tried my best for you, baby. But unfortunately, look, that REM album, I realized 14 in terms of what you did for the Critics Quadrant. But, you know, I know there's a lot of REM fans. And I knew it was going to be a tough haul, you know, a tough haul. And again, as I said, out of the 90s REM albums, Automatic for the People, definitely my favorite.
This REM album, I was a huge REM album from early on. And this one, I just never jived with me. I just kind of jumped off the train with this REM album. And I kind of thought people were going to lean that way as well. But unfortunately for the Wu-Tang, the Shaolin sleeps tonight.
Well said. Well said, Mike. And I will tell people, if you haven't heard, I think it's called, what is it called, Mike? The Return to the 36 Chambers, the Dirty Version, the Old Dirty Bastard first solo album. Like, that's an incredible album, too, with Hippa to the Hoppa and all that stuff on it. Like, that's really, really good. It makes a nice compliment to the Wu-Tang Clan. I'll be listening to both of those with my pierced nipple.
Always remember, kids, protect your neck.
Wait, yeah, they're going to go for the neck. You got to protect it. Double team the neck.
All right. Number 4. Here we go. This one was not an upset. This was the highest seed to advance. Number 4, Dr. Dre, The Chronic, 55 votes over number 13, Missy Elliott, Supa Dupa Fly, 16 votes. I got to say, as I'm a little bit behind working my way through listening to all of these albums, but I did just listen to Supa Dupa Fly today. And man, I really liked it. I really liked that album a lot. And
it's a good album.
That Timbaland production, just tremendous. Just tremendous. So anyway, but nevertheless, The Chronic, a beloved album, I think. And 55 to 16 is your final there with Dr. Dre moving on. Jason.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's, you know, I'm a huge Missy Misdemeanor Elliott fan. And I still am hoping that ultimately she's got like one or more albums in her. But like, this was the start. I was a big fan of this album, but look, Dr. Dre at the time when that came on and that blew up the way it did, you know, that it's hard to argue against Dr. Dre. Also was the debut of the world for Snoop Dogg at the end of the day, too. So, you know, understood that Dr. Dre was probably winning this one.
Yeah, I mean, both albums, I think, kind of were groundbreaking in introducing other people to the population at large. And, you know, Missy had all kinds of guests on hers. And you know, Dre brought Snoop to the forefront. Now, wow. Look at him on NBC doing all his Olympic stuff.
But let me say this about that. When you go back and listen to that now, and like you said, this is the like Snoop's debut, right? Man, he just came out like fully formed. I mean, he just sounds great on this record. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I was a little surprised by this. I know that you know, Dre's album is fantastic. I thought Missy would get some more votes. And maybe it's because I saw her on this tour and she just was so much fun. Like, that was one of the most fun concerts I've ever seen in my life. And she had the big blow-up suit she was wearing and all those excellent stage props, and it was really good. It holds a special place in my heart. But yeah, a little bit surprised by the margin.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, now moving on to the number five seed, also victorious with the highest vote total of this round in this quadrant, Radiohead's OK Computer, 119 votes over number 12, Erykah Badu, Baduism, with 12 votes.
So here's the thing about Radiohead, if we're going to throw in basketball analogies. This band can play four corners, you know, basically just pass the ball around, lull you, and then all of a sudden go on a 20-point fast break run. You know, if you listen to OK Computer, you definitely get that feeling too, where there's slow moments and then there's the moments that, like, basically, you know, even like within songs that all of a sudden just take off. I think a couple people commented, kind of feel bad for a little bad for Erykah Badu. I mean, that's a fabulous album. If you've never listened to Baduism, definitely go and give it a shot. But, Radiohead, there's a reason Radiohead's my pick to come out of this bracket. I think they may end up potentially saving a nipple here. But before we get there, I do think, as I said, Radiohead, you know, they got the highest vote total. So, definitely there's a Radiohead armada starting up at the end of the day.
OK Computer was obviously their breakthrough album. They completely just threw everything out that they did on their first album and said, we're going to be this band now. We're going to be progressive. We're going to just mess with people's heads, and it still caught on in popularity, and it's for me, it's one of the best albums, period. I'm a big Radiohead fan. And when this one came out, I couldn't wait for this one to come out, and I grabbed it as soon as it came out, and I was blown away. And so for Erykah Badu, I don't think she's going to really care that she got blown out in our little bracket. But there was no surprises here with Radiohead.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Well said, sir. Yeah, it was a tough spot for Erykah Badu in this tournament. She had to go out to the West bracket, a little sleep. They playing on a different time zone than they're used to and coming up against a team in red hot form. But what you said, Mike, I think is very insightful. The fact that this really was, when it came out, a very experimental rock album. There was a lot of stuff happening on there that weren't, you know, that not a lot of bands had done before, and yet it achieved massive popularity and continues to be held in very high esteem. So that's you're right on the money with that.
I think Radiohead's only gotten more popular over the years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
Okay, number six versus number 11. Six, A Tribe Called Quest, The Low End Theory. Number 11 was My Bloody Valentine, Loveless. And this is the only matchup of this quadrant where a hip-hop album took out an indie rock album.
Yeah.
Tribe, 63 votes. My Bloody Valentine, 48 votes.
Look, I was happy that there was at least one hip hop album that beat a rock album. This Tribe album is definitely fantastic. My Bloody Valentine, yes, brought shoegaze to the table, but this Tribe Called Quest album is a great album. Q-Tip, Fife Dog, even Busta Rhymes, I think, making a couple appearances on this. And, I want to see how it does in the next round, but at least gets to the second round here.
I was bugging out when I saw the results for this one. And here's the scenario. Tribe Called Quest in my opinion, they're not just a hip hop act. They are also an alternative act, because they were doing stuff in hip hop that not a lot of people were doing. And they were incorporating jazz and funk beats into it. And that Tribe is one of my favorite bands, and I will stand by the Tribe forever.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I mentioned last time when we were previewing this bracket that this is not even my favorite My Bloody Valentine album. And I love that A Tribe Called Quest took this. I think it's fantastic. I think they're a band too, you know, that their music holds up tremendously well. It really, really does. I mean, and I think the thing about Loveless is it's kind of a difficult record to get into at first, at least for maybe if you're uninitiated or never heard My Bloody Valentine before, because it sounds like a lot of sheets of noise and it takes a while for it to kind of soak in. So I think maybe listening to it for the first time or, you know, coming back to it after years, it's still really kind of hard to appreciate. I don't know. It's one of those ones for me that didn't open up till about 6 or 7 plays, and then it kind of really expands once you get in there. But it takes some work. So I think this is a worthy victory for A Tribe Called Quest.
Well, the thing I noticed in listening to both of these currently is, as much as I loved that My Bloody Valentine album when it came out, to me it sounded kind of dated now. And I didn't feel that way at all with A Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, moving on to number 7, versus 10. Number 7, Nas, Illmatic, 46 votes over number 10, Jay-Z, Reasonable Doubt, 6 votes.
Well, I mean, my take is the better album won. I mean, I've actually, this tournament kind of got me back listening to Illmatic, and it's been on repeat the last couple of days. You know, with all due respect to Jay-Z's Empire State of Mind, before we got there, there was Nas's New York State of Mind. And, you know, look, and Nas is a hip hop legend, and I realize Jay-Z is too. But to me, I think it's frankly after this one where Jay-Z really has his like foray in better days, in my opinion. You know, this is, I think, you know, it was going again, and I would even think Jay-Z may, somebody actually pointed out that I think Jay-Z is on the Nas album too. You know, it was a good win for Nas.
Q-Tip makes an appearance on the Nas album, so that's a double win for Q-Tip. But as I mentioned in the preview, people in the hip hop world consider this one of the best hip hop albums ever released. So it won for a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, agree. I think it's a worthy winner. A little bit disappointed in the low vote total, but I hope people are giving these records a chance, at least if you haven't heard them already.
That's right. Okay. And then rounding out the critics quadrant, the 8-9 matchup, number 9, Liz Phair, Exile in Guyville with 85 votes, upsetting, slight upset here. Number 8, Outkast, Aquemini, 14 votes.
Liz Phair, expletive intentionally deleted and running, and running up the score. Like, I mean, you know, this is somebody pointed out in the Facebook chat that, like, for me, and I do like Outkast. I do like Fasant's in my head.
I know.
He told us how to pronounce it.
Aquemini. You know what?
Yes, it's Aquemini.
As in, I wonder what happened to the O'Neaters.
There you go. There you go. Shout out Fasant. But yeah. That having been said, I mean, again, I think Outkast's better days are beyond this album, and you know that's not to take away from some of this. It is a very good album. I mean, Spotty Dotty Ocious, which I know I just butchered too, is a classic. That having been said, I mean, this is Liz Phair's masterpiece. You know, 85 votes is a pretty nice total too. So congratulations to Guy. Congratulations as we all get to go to Guyville again.
As I mentioned when I voted on the Facebook post, I got this when it came out. I read the critics' reviews of the album and I was excited to grab it. When I got it, I listened to it a lot. And, you know, it, the 90s were a coming out period for female musicians. You know, that's when the Lilith Fair took place, and it opened my eyes to the rock and roll women that I hadn't really made myself privy to before I started listening to Guyville. And so this was my entry into a lot of just, and I hate to separate the female musicians from the male musicians, but the female musicians have been, you know,
well,
downplayed for so long, and she kind of opened the door, you know, critic wise and popularity wise, where it just kind of opened the door for so many female led bands. Yes. And musicians to take the center stage, and I was fired up when that album ended up winning this one.
I do think that's important, Mike, and I think this album was one of those that sort of blazed a trail in allowing women to find their voice in the music industry, right, and express themselves in a way that maybe that, you know, they didn't get that opportunity before. And and man, talk about an indie record, right? I mean, this is like so lo-fi and for it to be this popular and this acclaimed is really an achievement, I think. But anyway, Patrick.
Yeah, I'll just say I think for our listening audience, a lot of people like myself, you know, and Mike and others, when this album came out, you just remember that feeling you had of being a little bit shocked, a little bit fired up, and also, you know, excited about what this was going to do to people. And it's, you remember that when you go back and listen to the music. And also, it scrubs away all the crappy albums she made ever since that happened. So, it's good to know the talent was still there at the beginning.
All right, so that's the first round of the Critics Quadrant. We will preview the second round later when we come back around to this, but I will just briefly announce what the matchups will be. So in the second round, you will have Hole, Live Through This versus Liz Phair, Exile, and Guyville. Radiohead, OK Computer versus Dr. Dre, The Chronic. I think that's the primetime matchup.
Yeah.
REM, Automatic for the People versus Tribe Called Quest, Low End Theory. That's also a pretty hot matchup. And then Nas, Illmatic versus Lucinda Williams, Car Wheels on a Gravel Road. All right. Now, moving on to the Listener's Quadrant. So this just started. You can still get your votes in before noon Eastern time tomorrow on the first matchup. And then look every day over the next 7 days after that for more matchups on our Facebook page. So we'll start here with that first matchup that is currently going on. That is number one. Oh, before I do that, I should mention how we came up with this, Listener's Quadrant. Before the tournament started, we had a open submission of our podcast listeners where people could just say, these are my favorite albums of the 90s. And then took all of those and compiled those votes into the rankings here, the seedings here on this bracket. Anyway, all right, so that first matchup that's going on now is 1 versus 16. That is number 1, U2, Achtung Baby, versus number 16, Oasis, What's the Story, Morning Glory. Any thoughts on this one, Jason?
I mean, I know when I went early to vote, it was close. I haven't looked recently, but you know, it's funny. Obviously, Oasis, fresh off of what they did last year with the comeback and you know, the acclaim for the stadium shows that they ended up doing, I like it, you know, it's funny. Acton Baby came out, and I remember hearing The Fly, and I remember me and my friends going, "What is you two doing now?" But ultimately, I was a huge fan of Acton Baby. You know, I think this was a I see the listeners definitely agreed, as it's the number one seed in the draw, in the bracket. And you know, I think U2 takes it here, but I would assume Oasis is going to give them a little bit of fight.
So as far as this U2 album is kind of where I jumped off the U2 train. I was into U2 before this album. When this one came out, it just didn't jive with me. It just didn't happen. The Oasis album, you couldn't escape it on the radio. And everybody called them Beatles clones and whatever with that. But it's just a great rock and roll album. And it still holds up very well today, where I think Acton Baby sounds pretty dated, because it sounds like U2 was trying to get into the future with this album and with their production and their sound. And it just sounds that way to me as I listen to it today, where Oasis, it's just a timeless record, where it came out in the 90s and it still flows and it's still easily listenable in the 2020s. Hmm. So my vote is for Oasis.
Well said, Mike. I listened to Acton Baby and I swear to God, I was like, I have never heard any of these songs. Well, except
really?
For one. Except okay. for one.
One.
And it was called One. Yeah.
Yes. So. And they're the one seed. I forgot to mention
yes.
that.
Yes. Well, we should mention that too, because they were kind of in our listener voting, they were a runaway for the number one seed.
Yeah.
I think they won clear by 5 or 6 votes or something like that, which I don't know if any other margins were that large. So, but yeah, I just could not remember it for some reason. I think having a 1-year-old at that time probably had something to do with it. But other than that, yeah.
All right. All I can say about this is, if Oasis ends up losing, to all the Oasis fans out there, don't look back in anger. All right. That's all I got to say. All right.
And Noel and Liam, you know, don't start fighting over this at the end of the day. If you try, you know, look, you know, there's a lot of conflict in the world today. The fact you guys got together gave us all hope last year.
That's a good point.
Keep it calm at the end of the day. No, Liam, you know, give each other a hug in consolation if you end up falling. And obviously drink a lot if you end up winning.
The surprising reason behind Oasis's most recent breakup.
Losing in the
they lost that's in the first round of the RTS bracket right. challenge.
All right, moving on to number 2. This will be you can start to vote in this one 1 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow. That's Saturday,
Valentine's Day.
That's right. Now, you know, earlier we talked about disparate matchups in the sense of like different genres of records going against each other. This one, you know, is one that I think could not be more different within rock and roll. Number 2, Tom Petty, Wildflowers, against number 15, They Might Be Giants, Flood.
Well, and I'll be honest, like, unlike the first two brackets, I am a little bit less confident in this one, but I think I got Tom Petty coming out of this to get to the final four. You know, Wildflowers for me, like, you know, it's funny because this has become the album now that really is deemed Petty's masterpiece. I mm-hmm. mean, when they did the rollout of the Wildflowers reissue, or you know, Wildflowers Sessions, there was such a big deal made about it. And so I think there are a lot of Tom Petty fans out there. And I think they're going to carry Wildflowers far. That having been said, I'm pretty sure there's a good chance I may be eating crow, because I know there's also a good contingent of they might be giant people out there who will be happy to prove me wrong. But I'm going with Wildflowers in this.
As far as Tom Petty's concerned, I never really paid attention to him. I grew up in an area with a couple of different classic rock stations that played Tom Petty songs constantly. And I just became jaded with Tom Petty's music. And as the years went on, I just never really paid attention to what Tom Petty was doing, because it just didn't really jive with me. I mean, they're good rock and roll songs. If a song came on the radio, I'd left the radio, I left the station on. But it just wasn't anything I ever sought out. But then as the years went on, let me back up. I was so jaded that back in, 89, 90, when Into the Great Wide Open came out.
Mm-hmm.
Early 90s, he was touring with the Replacements.
Yeah.
They played at the New York State Fair with the Replacements opening for them. I was a Replacements fan at the time. I didn't go to that show because I didn't give a crap about Tom Petty.
Wow.
And that's a show that was right before the MTV Music Awards, and Axl Rose guest appeared in the encore, and they did Knocking on Heaven's Door. And dumbass Coley didn't go to the show, but that's kind of where I started picking up more on Petty. And after he passed away, at the brewery, we decided to do a Tom Petty tribute night at the brewery. And I got together a bunch of local area musicians and had them pick out different songs of Petty's that they wanted to play throughout the night. This thing ended up going for like 4 hours. Wow. And like, we have a very small brewery, and there was probably at one point there were like 20 people, 20 musicians just jammed in the one end of the building, just jamming on Petty songs. And the place was elbow to elbow people. And I'm like, you know what? Everybody knows a Petty song. And so as much as I talked about They Might Be Giants in the preview episode and how close they are to my heart, and that Flood album, especially from my bachelor pad days and singing those songs, Tom Petty's going to take this. He may even take the whole bracket, to be honest with you. This is a classic album. I picked up the re-release when it came out last year, a couple years ago. It's just a classic album. I'm a late Petty adopter, and I'm ashamed to say so.
It was interesting to me to follow up on Mike's point that the people that submitted brackets, and of course, Jim and I were privy to seeing who's voted for what, because somebody has to. You got to add them up. But I was surprised knowing a lot of the people that voted and what their musical tastes were, and looking at the other albums they had on their ballot, that so many different people included the Petty album on there. So the people that put a lot of indie rock, yet they still had this one. People that put a lot of heavier stuff, that was still on there with Petty. So I found that to be very telling. I haven't listened to the They Might Be Giants album in a long time. I'm listening to it after we're done recording this evening. So I'm very much looking forward to reacquainting myself with that record, too.
The kids know where Istanbul now because of They Might Be Giants. And my youngest, that was her first show, was They Might Be Giants. So
you're saying They Might Be Giants is for the children.
There you go.
Yes. So protect your neck.
For educational value, you definitely would have to go with They Might Be Giants in this match. That's right. That's for sure.
I'll just say real quickly, Tom Petty's 90s output is really pretty strong overall. And Wildflowers, I think it was 94. By the way, Rick Rubin produced it and did a masterful job, I think, on this record. It sounds great. There was another album Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers put out in 99 called Echo that is also
a
really strong record. And I would encourage people to go reacquaint themselves with that album as well. Okay. Moving on. Number 3 seed in the listener quadrant is Matthew Sweet's Girlfriend going up against number 14 Depeche Mode Violator.
So Depeche Mode was one of my picks, Violator. You know, I talked more, I think, in the last in the listeners bracket about things that were definitely game changers for me. And hearing Dave Gahan yell out, reach out and touch faith. I mean, that just hooked its claws into me. You know, and I'm a huge Depeche Mode fan. I ultimately circled back to the 80s stuff, you know, but at the time, like, I was mainly a hit radio guy, and the only song I knew was People Are People. And, you know, then you hear that same guy yelling, reach out and touch faith. And it's like, yeah, I'm all in on Depeche Mode. And that having been said, I'll throw this out there that when I go on Facebook to go vote in this thing, I type into the it's a search engine, Rocking the Suburbs, and 9 times out of 10, when I pull up your the link to your page, there's a picture of Mr. Patty and Mr. Jim next to Matthew Sweet, which was one of your early interviews. So I know Matthew Sweet is a fan favorite. I will be surprised if Depeche Mode makes it past this round.
Yeah.
Back in high school, all my friends were into the 80s Depeche Mode, and I just wasn't buying it. It was just too electronic-y for me, too weird for me. Well, I like weird music all over the place, but it just didn't jive with me, the early Depeche Mode. And then when this album came out, I was like, wait a minute, what the heck happened to the 80s Depeche Mode? These guys are this is a legit album. They had the policy of truth for this album is that they have some legit songs on it, and they made it. They became huge because of this album. They were already pretty big, but they became huge because of this album. And this album is still carrying them today. But Matthew Sweet's album, that Girlfriend album, that's a perfect pop album. And as Jason said, you know, the interview that you guys did with Matthew Sweet, that cemented, you know, just hearing him talk about things and the album itself, that songs on that album I listened to over and over, and Matthew Sweet is one of the most played bands at the brewery. So I'm gonna go. I my heart says Matthew Sweet, my head says probably Depeche. I mean, the other way around. My heart says Depeche Mode's probably a better album, but my head says Matthew Sweet is probably gonna take this one because it's more of a timeless sounding album.
Yeah, the guitar playing on Girlfriend is astounding, especially the sort of renaissance of Richard Lloyd. And, you know, when you listen to Divine Intervention, the first song in this record, you just start getting like goosebumps, even if you've heard it like 15 times, because you just can't wait for that. Bring, and then just the guitar lines are so great, so interlocking, and the production is great. It's a tough spot for Depeche Mode here. I think as strong as that record is, I think if you go back and listen to Girlfriend, watch out, it might get under your skin. It might make a run. Yeah. Might make a run out of this group if you're not careful, folks.
I think you're right there. If I had to pick what album do I think is going to ultimately emerge from this quadrant, I think it's Girlfriend, but we'll see what happens. All right. Moving on to number 4 versus 13. 4, The Sundays, Reading, Writing, and Arithmetic versus 13, Belle and Sebastian, If You're Feeling Sinister. And people don't know Belle and Sebastian. That's not just two guys. That's like a whole band.
So before the wonderful people at Pitchfork paywalled their music review site, not necessarily a fan, Pitchfork people, but I get it. That having been said, before they did that, they did a week of reviews of, I guess, their 30th anniversary. And Belle and Sebastian's, the Belle and Sebastian album actually got a perfect 10, which is like rare air, I think, for in the Pitchfork world. You know, it's funny. You know, both of these albums really were sort of newer discoveries for me. I didn't really listen to the Sundays. I got more into Belle and Sebastian recently, but really hadn't listened to them. And I think you guys had even said you were kind of a little bit surprised in the when we actually previewed the whole bracket. You're a little surprised how high the Sundays showed up, but I'm interested to see how this one picks out. I'm not sure if I got a pick on this.
It's a pick'em match.
I think both albums are going to draw from similar fan bases, to be honest. So there may be a split vote here, just from the sounds of both of them. But the only Sundays I really knew was Here's Where the Story Ends, which was the single from that album that was very popular for them. And it's kind of what blew them up and made them into almost a mainstream band and alternative radio back in the 90s. But I can't think of anything else they've done. Belle and Sebastian's just got a catalog. And I don't know if I mentioned, but when I was doing my senior research project, Death Cab for Cutie was pretty much my soundtrack for doing my senior research project when I was back in school. And the similar artists that would come up, Belle and Sebastian was one of them. That's where I got introduced to them. And I probably wouldn't have picked up on them if it weren't for that, you know, recommended if you like, kind of like what the College Music Journal used to do. And I really dig Belle and Sebastian. I'm hoping for them to pull this one out, but I think the Sundays will probably pull it out because of the angelic vocals on this album, as Dr. Bob mentioned on his show yesterday. Just a great voice she's got. I'm sorry, I don't know her name, but I'm pulling for Belle and Sebastian. I think the Sundays will probably pull this out, though.
Well, I'll tell you, if this hadn't been voted in by the listeners, I would have put it on my top picks on my ballot. Because
which one?
If You're Feeling Sinister by Belle and Sebastian.
Okay.
It's one of my all-time favorite records. I mean, every song on the record is just incredible. And it's amazing about Belle and Sebastian because Stuart Murdoch was in college and he was in a music business course. He was also a bus driver, I believe, at the same time in Glasgow. And he recorded a couple songs as part of the course. And they had a label, the college had a label that released one single every year. And when they heard Stuart Murdoch's songs, they said, we're going to put out an album of these. And that was their first album, Tiger Milk. And that's kind of how Belle and Sebastian got started. And I fell in love with that record when it came out. And I have always been a big fan of Belle and Sebastian. Went to see him just a couple of years ago with the wife. So I hope it does well. I love the Sundays record too. I think it's wonderful. It really takes me back to a certain time in my life. Like when I hear the Sundays, I just think of like a certain time period, and that doesn't necessarily mean it's dated. It just reminds me of a certain time.
Right.
Like I can almost remember where I was when I hear a lot of those songs. Harriet Wheeler is the vocalist, of the Sundays.
Okay. Thank you.
And, yep. It's going to be very twee on this day, but we'll see who comes out on top.
That's a good point. You know, Mike, you were saying that, you know, the only song that you really know or didn't really know well from the Sundays is Here's Where the Story Ends. And I would say pretty strong song to know. I mean, I can, that alone could possibly carry this to victory. Really just a tremendous pop song. Okay.
You're not wrong there at all.
Yeah. All right. Number 5 versus number 12. Now, this is good. This is a good sort of earthy matchup here, right?
Yeah.
There's going to be some tough play on this one, on the court this time. Number 5, Wilco Being There versus number 12, Neil Young, Ragged Glory.
So I remember when we started this with the American Band Tournament and, you know, basically a lot of people coming out of the woodwork saying, how is Wilco doing as well as they're doing in the tournament? And I guess this is my way of saying, folks, Jeff Tweedy is a good guy. little bit misunderstood, but a good guy at the end of the day. You know, look, it draws a tough first round matchup. You know, Neil Young, Crazy Horse. You know, this is the heart of Neil Young's sort of comeback. You know, this was the second album that basically kind of cemented him basically becoming basically, you can blame if you like it, you can thank him, and if you don't like it, you can blame him, because this was the one that kind of also cemented that grunge was going to be a thing at the end of the day. I'm a Wilco fan. It's going to be tough to vote against Neil, but I'll be voting for being there.
I was a Neil Young fan early on when I was in high school. I latched on to Neil's stuff. And the Freedom album, I listened to that a ton. But somewhere around, I don't know, was it 89-ish, when Uncle Tupelo broke up, I picked up on Uncle Tupelo. And I was like, wait a minute, what's this? They got punk rock influences, but they're doing kind of Americana style. And I picked up on them just as they were breaking up. I think I had the Anodyne album on cassette. And I love that album. I think that was their last album. And then they split up into Sunvolt and Wilco. And I bought both Sunvolt, Trace, and Wilco's AM at the same time. And I've gravitated more towards the Wilco album at the time. Now I'm a huge Trace fan. We'll talk about that later. But being there when that came out, and just the different versions of songs they put on there, and I was all in on Wilco. And you know, no offense to Uncle Neil and his fan base in our listening audience, but I'm going with Wilco on this one.
It's funny that these two came up against each other, because one of the segues I used to make all the time on mixtapes was Wilco's Red Eyed and Blue into Neil Young's Tired Eyes from Tonight's the Night. And I always thought it was a fantastic segue. So I got no idea which way this one goes, man.
No, it is. It's sort of a student and the master matchup, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's also a matchup that is out of sight, out of mind. So, all right, we'll move on to number 6 versus 11. Now, I got to preface this by saying I received some text messages from one Adam Coop, about how nervous he is about this, because apparently Weezer's Blue Album is his favorite album of the 90s. Weezer's Blue Album is number 6 seed, going up against what I think is a really, really strong double-digit seed here. Number 11, Teenage Fan Club, Bandwagon-esque.
Well, Mr. Coop, I also put Weezer's Blue Album on my bracket. This is definitely one of my favorite albums of the 90s. You know, I actually revisited this, I think, last year when Weezer, I think it was last year, Weezer did their 25th anniversary tour of the Blue Album, maybe 2 years ago. You know, this just from top to bottom. But I also know, I think one of the things that kind of caught, and not a surprise, because it's a great, as you said, Jim, it's a great album and definitely deserves a place in this tournament. But I know there's a lot of love in this community for Teenage Fan Club, Bandwagon-esque. You know, I'm a little nervous. I picked against Neil Young, so I'm a little nervous of further upsetting potentially Stephen Rutledge. So I'll just say I'm looking forward to seeing this matchup and seeing how it ends up.
I wasn't really familiar with Teenage Fan Club's music. I never really dipped into them. I knew of them. I never really paid much attention to them. So I didn't really get into, I think Stephen Rutledge was the reason I started listening to more Teenage Fan Club. Weezer, the Blue Album, it's just banger after banger on that one. I'm sorry, but I got that one for Christmas the year it came out. And I listened. I still go back to that album. A lot of the other Weezer albums, not so much. This album, it's just, it's timeless. And the videos that went along with this album were so creative and goofy. And I think that's what kind of, you know, blew them up when MTV was still doing videos. And so I'm going Weezer, just sentimental value on that one.
Mike, who gave you that blue album for Christmas?
One of my roommates in the bachelor pad.
Oh, nice.
His name is Chris. We did a little gift exchange amongst ourselves, and he gave me that one. I don't know what made him think I would like it, but I did.
Very good. Okay. Patrick.
Love it. Yeah, I will say this. I really wanted Teenage Fan Club Songs from Northern Britain to make it, and so I'm kind of mad at Bandwagon-esque, and so I think Weezer's going to win.
All right. Say it ain't so. All right. Number 7 versus number 10. 7 is Sunvolt Trace, already mentioned a little bit earlier by Mike Coley, versus number 10, Neutral Milk Hotel in the Airplane Over the Sea.
Well, look, I mean, Sunvolt Trace, classic album. Neutral Milk Hotel. That may go down as one of the best indie albums in the 90s. I'm not going to cry. I remember what you said the last time, Pat. I'm not one of those guys who will cry discussing this album, but yeah, I mean, this is, you know, Neutral Milk Hotel, is an amazing album. I think also, with a lot of these matchups, I think this is, they're all going to be relatively close. I am going for Neutral Milk Hotel here.
I came into Neutral Milk Hotel. I remember seeing them in the press, and I'm like, what the heck kind of name is that? When are they going to stop being neutral? Maybe they need to take a side. But as I said in the when I was talking about Wilco, Sunvolt and Wilco, well, they were Uncle Tupelo. They split apart. The Trace album was a big part of my listening back when it came out. I got to see them on that tour. They were on the Horde tour that year. And I got to see them on that tour. It's the only time I've ever seen Sunvolt perform. But I also sang Windfall at one of the Suburbs Fests.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
When Miss Julie Snyder was swooning to my vocals for that song. Nobody's ever swooned to my vocals. Let me be clear about
that's
good.
That's a good endorsement. Yeah.
But Neutral Milk Hotel, when they made their comeback tour, I don't know, maybe 7 years ago, I think it was. They played at Brewery Omegang in Cooperstown, and my buddy and I went to that show, and I was blown away. What a fantastic band they are. And that's when I really started digging more into their stuff. And so I really came, like, I was into the Elephant Six stuff, but mainly the more pop sounding stuff, like especially Apples in Stereo. And normally what I would do is I would find, you know, back in the day, you read the liner notes, you find the band that the bands that the band thanked in the liner notes, and then you go looking for those bands in the record bins. And I never did that for some reason with the Elephant Six Collective. And I just kind of stuck with Apples and Stereo. And I should have dove into Neutral Milk Hotel as well, because that's just a fantastic album. I got to go with Sunvolt, though.
Interesting matchup, because I think both these records, when you listen to them and start getting into them, they put you in kind of a different place. You can almost go into a little trance. And of course, you know, the Neutral Milk Hotel album has echoes of the Holocaust and, you know, Anne Frank and things like this. And then Neutral Milk Hotel feels like a record that comes from between the margins of America, you know, like on the worn out kind of highways and things like that. Yet they're both just so amazing to listen to from start to finish, and they put you in a trance in a different way. So I gotta say, hands up, man, it's a pick'em. It's a pick'em.
Yeah. All right. Okay, and then rounding out the listeners quadrant, first round, number 8, Jeff Buckley, Grace, versus number 9, Smashing Pumpkins, Siamese Dream.
So these were the other two that earned this bracket that I picked, and I think they were both relatively near the top of my my bracket at the end of the day. So needless to say, I'll be probably in the fetal position all day and basically saying why and a lot when, before I actually go to vote on this. I mean, look, Jeff Buckley had one of the most amazing voices that I think I ever heard. And, you know, I realize he's now been dead for like about 30 plus years, but I mean, man, that ended up being a huge loss when Jeff Buckley passed away early. And I mean, the Smashing Pumpkins album, you know, I love the entire album, but I mean, the beauty of the song Disarm, which is, I think, one of my favorite songs of this entire decade. You know, I think the Pumpkins are going to win. I guess I'm going to be glad that one of my four in this bracket end up getting into that next round. But man, that's going to be a tough one to choose.
Smashing Pumpkins' Gish, when that came out, I was in a record store and they were playing the Gish album. And I couldn't get over the drumming and the guitars, and I was enamored. I grabbed Gish right away. I listened to it constantly. When Siamese Dream came out, I got all my buddies to listen to it. They all got on board with it, and so back then we were all, like, as I said, we had the swinging bachelor pad, and we used to go to happy hour every Friday night at different places. And a buddy of mine had a Mitsubishi Eclipse. And he was driving home, and we get a call at the apartment because we'd gotten home before they did. And it was the sheriff's department saying that my buddy got in an accident on the way home. Hmm. And it was a day like today where there's probably 4 feet of snow on the ground. And he landed on his hood or on his roof, and nothing happened to either one of them. Thank God. But he was on an interstate. And he said a dog ran in front of him. That's what he told the police, which I don't want to speak for him, but I don't think there was a dog involved in this accident. But the story, as we were telling it years and years later, was that Siamese Dream was playing in the tape deck as the accident happened. And all my friend Chris, the one who gave me the Weezer album, all he could hear was Billy Corgan just singing above his head as he was sitting upside down in the seat of the car waiting for somebody to get them out of the car. And so Siamese Dream's got that little connection for me. But some of the songs on that album are just fantastic. But as Patrick said, it doesn't sound dated to me. It just puts me at a different place in time. Hmm. But the drumming on that album, Jimmy Chamberlin, man, what a fantastic drummer. And the riffs on that album. But I was telling Jim earlier, I just listened to Jeff Buckley's album, and I bought it when it came out, just based on all the critical acclaim, and I couldn't get into it at the time. I don't know why I couldn't connect with it. I was listening to just the song Grace. I was listening to and the different influences that he had and the influences that he made from just that one song. Like, you could hear traces of like early like prog rock, like, sorry Patrick, but like early Genesis or early Yes, and then he's kind of folky and he's kind of alt rocky, but then like his vocals and his guitar style kind of influenced the death metal band Opeth in some of the stuff that they did later on, when Opeth started getting away from the Cookie Monster vocals and dealing more in the clean vocals. And so you can tell that Opeth was influenced by Jeff Buckley. So I don't know where to go with this one. I really don't. It's a toss up for me. But I think sentimentally, I got to go for the Pumpkins.
Yeah, I mean, a fitting 8-9 matchup, because I do think it's probably going to be the one that, you know, I don't know. It could really go either way on this one. And I will say, I kind of understand where you're coming from, Mike, about Jeff Buckley, but kind of in a different way. I was a big fan of his father and still am a big fan of his father's music. And I always had a hard time separating Tim Buckley's music from his son's music because I just heard so much of Tim Buckley in his son, not only his voice, but the way he approached music, the eclecticness of his records. And then there's also, you know, the romantic factor of the, you know, losing somebody like that in such a terrible way at such a young age who hadn't even reached the prime of his career. So all that is part of it. So I don't know which way it's going to go. I've never been a huge Smashing Pumpkins fan, but it's not like I didn't like them. I've seen them in concert a couple times and always kind of enjoyed their music. So I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. Okay, so there you go. That's the first round of the Listener's Quadrant. Vote every day at facebook.com/suburbspod. Okay. Anyway, we're way over time here. We're getting cut off by the affiliates. Let's get out of here. We're in overtime on this update. We will check in, do another update in 8 days. There you go. All right. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been
Jason Goebel,
Mike Coley.
All right. Thanks, guys. And we'll talk to you all later.
Is it getting better? Or do you feel the same? Will it make it easier on you? Got someone to blame. You say one love, one life, when it's one need in the night. One love, we get to share it. Leaves you, baby. Disappoint you or leave a bad taste in your mouth. You act like you never had love and you want me to go without. One, but we're not the same. We get to carry each other, carry each other. Whoa. Have you come here for forgiveness? Have you come to raise the dead?
I just thought of this as we were talking. Patrick, there are two albums in this quadrant that have songs that reference Kiss.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Being There.
Weezer.
Wilco's Being There has a heavy metal drummer.
Right.
And that's Weezer's right. Blue album has In the Garage.
Oh. Yep. Oh, I forgot about that on the Weezer album. I am going to have to. Oh, that's a segue right there.
There you go. There you go. Exactly.
Beautiful.
All wanted the best tournament. You just got the best tournament, baby.
We always find a way to jam them in there.
There are no albums in this quadrant that reference Phil Collins.